This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Your questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. And you never know what's going to come up. Because, well, you got to listen to the entire segment because, well, this could be something that's relevant to you, to your health concerns.
Or to your loved ones.
Or to that of one of your loved ones or a friend. So,
or patients, if you're practitioners.
Listening. Indeed, yes, we have many practitioners. With me today, Layla Mudin, who's our nutritionist in residence. And so we're going to start the question lottery in just a moment. But before we do that, allow me to vent one more time. Because I've got something to vent about, and I'm going to take this opportunity to deconstruct a study that appeared in the New England Journal of Medicine. You know, I'm a subscriber to the New England Journal of Medicine. Mm-hmm. I keep vowing that I'm going to cancel that subscription, but I just, it's like rubbernecking, morbid curiosity, because like when you see like a roadside crash, you know, you always slow down and you want to see, you know, the mangled bodies. So, you know, I do keep up with the medical literature and, you know, occasionally there's an article with relevance to the field of nutrition. So I was quite excited to see an article in the New England Journal of Medicine this week that looks at the effects of omega-3 supplements, fish oil supplements, in diabetes. So this is a big, elaborate study. And in the New England Journal of Medicine, I mean, you can't
beat
that. Top-notch journal, right? And so it generated this headline, "Omega-3 Supplementation Fails to Prevent Heart Disease." In a new study published in the New England Journal of Medicine, investigators sought to examine the safety and efficacy of omega-3 fatty acid supplementation in patients with diabetes. So how do they do that? They gave some diabetic patients fish oil and some a placebo, and they followed them for 7.5 years. And they looked at the incidence of cardiovascular events, deaths due to heart disease, heart attacks, the need for what's called revascularization, which means an angiogram, I mean, an angioplasty or a bypass, and so on. And what they found was absolutely no difference. It made no difference at all. So the conclusion is omega-3 supplementation fails to prevent heart disease. So I looked at the study, because you don't just read the headlines. You got to look at the study.
Right.
What did they do?
My first question is, how many milligrams of fish oil did they get?
They gave them, ready, the drum roll please, one fish oil capsule per day.
You're kidding.
And it was, you know, 1 gram, 1,000 milligrams of fish oil.
And, that's hardly therapeutic.
Okay. Number one.
Yeah.
Hardly therapeutic.
Yeah.
Number two, what do you think the placebo was?
Oh.
Take a flying leap at that one. The placebo capsule, 1 gram, well, identical looking to the fish oil, was
some kind of polyunsaturated
olive
sugar?
Oil.
Olive oil.
So there, what we have is
A total confounder.
We actually have a study that shows that fish oil and olive oil are equivalent in terms of protection against cardiovascular disease.
Oh my goodness!
Because we didn't really have a true placebo, because olive oil may have some protective effects, even in that minuscule amount. Of course, it takes more than just a 1 gram or one capsule of olive oil.
With all the beneficial effects, with all the beneficial effects of olive oil, why would they even choose that as a placebo?
That's my comment. Is come on, how did you design a study that A, was done and probably cost a lot of money, because it's a lot of patients over a lot of years, they crunched the data. They submitted it to the New England Journal of Medicine, and nobody on the peer review said, this study stinks.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. So there, that's my rant for today. And, you know, we'll be talking a little more about the limitations of this study.
Yeah. This is your tax dollars at work, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, these grants that are given to scientific researchers for these studies are coming out of there.
Yeah, and I do believe...
Pretty much.
I'm looking at it. I do believe that there's...
Especially if it's NIH, National
Institutes, funds,
Institutes of Health.
It's called the Study of Cardiovascular Events and Diabetes, blah, blah, blah. So yeah. I'm pretty sure there's public funds involved. And okay.
Yeah.
There you have it. But, wow. You know, this juxtapose that with a study that was industry-sponsored looking at Vascepa, which is a synthetic fish oil, that will be marketed heavily, that will cost like upwards of $300 to $400
a month
supply, where they used, you know, correct dosage. They used 4 grams a day.
Yeah.
And what they found was a 25% reduction in cardiovascular risk in a very similar population, in patients with insulin resistance who had cardiovascular risk factors, obesity, high triglycerides, bad lipids, and probably, you know, without overt diabetes, they had borderline blood sugars. Okay.
Wow.
So anyway, so, hey, but when it's a drug, come on, you know, it's great, but fish oil pills, nah.
No, unbelievable.
Okay.
Unbelievable. All right. On to questions.
Yes.
Okay. We've got an email from Yogesh. Sir, I have a query about my ear. I've lost my hearing on one side.
I wish we had like the mailing address of that because it's by virtue of the name and the circumlocution language.
Yeah.
suggests that we have a potential South Asian follower.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah.
I've lost my hearing on one side and can it be treated or not? Please tell me, because many doctors are saying that it cannot be cured.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what we're talking about here is we're talking about sensory neural hearing loss, which does indeed occur usually on one side. Mm-hmm. And that's a subject of some research. And actually, some studies have suggested a couple of things. One is something that we talk about quite a lot. And there's actually some research on this underway. Nicotinamide riboside.
Yes.
Which makes sense because it works on the mitochondria, and we think that there is some sort of mitochondrial malfunction when the sensory nerves are not producing energy efficiently and there's a hearing loss. So there may be some protective effects on that. Specifically, there's a study on hyperbaric oxygen therapy in the treatment of this.
Good for so many things.
Yeah, so what I would do, I mean, if I had my druthers, like in the ideal world, I would have unlimited resources and unlimited time. I would have a patient take lots of antioxidants, including and nicotinamide riboside. I would give them glutathione via the oral route. I would use RegActive degenerated in the body, and I would use NAC as a precursor, and I would give intravenous glutathione, as we've done in a couple of patients who've had sensory neural hearing loss.
Alpha-lipoic acid.
Alpha-lipoic acid, indeed. Actually, in some studies, the military has done some studies looking at alpha-lipoic acid's protective effects against hearing loss in high intensity sound situations, which they have a lot of in the military. They pay a lot of money in the VA for hearing rehabilitation, you know, and damages that are service related in hearing loss.
Yeah.
You know, do the firing of weapons. There's also, you know, firing of weapons and just the high intensity sound that's involved in military efforts.
Makes sense.
So, okay. So those are some of the measures that we would undertake.
Yeah. You have to wonder why he's losing hearing in one side, whether it's because of loud noise or whether it's because of something like Meniere's disease.
Yeah, I mean, we have to look at cause, obviously. The presumption here is that it's what's called sensory neural hearing loss.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are many diseases that can cause hearing loss as well.
That's true.
And in fact, you know, depending on the country you're in, you know, often when you have sudden hearing loss, you get an MRI immediately to see if perhaps you've got some sort of eighth nerve tumor, you know, in neurofibromatosis. Which is, you'll see some impingement with a benign tumor of the auditory nerve.
Interesting. Yogesh, we hope you find relief soon. Thank you for your query. Okay. We've got an email from John. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, a friend was recently diagnosed with prostate cancer and was told that his therapy will commence with him receiving estrogen. Does this make sense? Unfortunately.
I don't really know what's going on there, because usually, instead of using estrogen, what they do is they use hormone blockade.
Yeah.
And estrogen was used a lot in the past mm-hmm. for prostate cancer, but maybe this person's failed the hormone blockade and may be receiving estrogen as a treatment for prostate cancer. I mean, obviously,
to help quash.
Estrogen is the opposite of testosterone. Women don't have prostates.
Yeah.
There's zero incidence of prostate cancer in women.
Because we don't have prostates.
Right. I don't think they even transsexual, you know, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, we have to be careful what we, you know, with our gender assignations these days. So mm-hmm. I guess technically there are some women who could get prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so the point being that estrogen is very suppressive. And
and that would be okay.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, clearly, there are going to be side effects.
Sure.
You know, when you administer estrogen to a male, at the very least, there's going to be gynecomastia, breast tenderness, and, you know, breast
loss
enlargement.
Loss of muscle mass.
Loss of libido, loss of muscle mass, you know, emotional changes, and so on.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. John, thank you for your question. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. We've got an email from Randy. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, is there any benefit to raising urine pH by taking a teaspoon of sodium bicarbonate each day? My urine pH is a 6 to a 6.5 in the morning, although if I take a teaspoon of sodium bicarb before bedtime, it raises it to 8.5 in the morning and throughout the day. My blood pressure is pretty good, his numbers, and appears to be unaffected by the additional sodium.
So, congratulations, you've created alkaline urine.
Yeah. And that's about it, unfortunately, Randy. Really,
I'm not sure that there's a benefit. I mean, there are some people who are big believers in the alkalinization of the body.
Yes.
Through dietary means.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't be too alkaline. But, you know, as your urine tests reveal is that, you know, you are alkalinizing your urine. Mm-hmm. And your body pH remains within a certain range,
yeah.
carefully regulated within just a few hundredths of a point of
it's
pH.
Like, it's like 7.4. 7.38,
maybe 7.39 to 7.42.
Yeah.
You know, in that range. And perhaps if you engage in lots of physical activity and you get lactic acidosis, you may go a little higher. Mm. If you're very sick and you lose your kidney function, which regulates the pH, then you know you can become acidic.
Well, Randy says, I've read that this will help reduce internal rust rate and help preserve
the
kidneys.
That's one of the tenets of holistic medicine that I don't buy.
Yeah.
I just don't buy into it.
Yeah. Our serum pH is very tightly controlled. Randy, do this. Yes, in the morning it will be higher, but take your urine pH again throughout the day.
So it'll
come back to equilibrium because your body wants to be there.
Right. Yeah, it'll pee out that excess bicarb.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
what you're getting. It doesn't mean you're more basic. It means you're peeing it out.
Yeah.
The other point to be made is when you take sodium bicarb, you're getting quite a sodium load. So that may be deleterious. You know, you're getting a lot of extra sodium.
I wouldn't
sodium.
Recommend sodium bicarb for anybody except for the occasional indigestion from mm-hmm. time to time
yeah.
or something like that.
We're not complete nihilists about acid base balance.
Yeah.
You know, one of the ways to get in trouble with acidity is to sit on your butt and do nothing.
Yep.
Because that will actually, it prevents the pH equilibration.
Mm-hmm.
But also at the same time, drink a lot of soda, which is rich in phosphoric acid.
Yes.
And have a lot of sugar and carbohydrates because they actually tend to contribute to the net acid load.
And if you're sitting around and you're having that soda, it's highly likely that you're eating a bunch of processed food.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need all that additional sodium. This is all acidic in the body.
Yeah.
Nature has really done a wonderful job of taking care of that for us by eating whole unprocessed food. Our acid-forming foods are the animals we eat, you know, all of that, the protein sources, and the produce, our vegetables and fruits, are the alkaline.
Right.
So acid-forming and alkaline-forming. In our modern diet, however, which include dairy products and grains, they are mostly acid-forming,
yeah,
depending mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. which food. So that's where you might get a little upset. Never mind the soda and the processed food and all of
right.
that. But, yeah, yeah. So, Randy, no, don't do the sodium bicarb. Eat no. well. Eat a balanced diet,
yeah.
and that should really take care of it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you for your question. Here's a question from Lewis. Dr. Hoffman, is the nitric oxide solution counterproductive on my varicose veins, since dilation is the key word here? What a great question.
The answer is no. Okay.
N-O for nitric oxide.
N-O, right. Very good, very good. Yeah, so the vasodilation that is mediated by nitric oxide occurs in the arteries.
And not in the veins.
And the veins are different, which are, the veins are, although they do expand and contract, mm-hmm. they're a little bit less regulated by the, you know, things like nitric oxide in terms
right.
of flow mediation.
Mm-hmm.
So they're more like passive tubes
uh-huh.
that are governed, they're sort of pump against gravity in your legs and the muscles contract them. Mm-hmm. Rhythmically, so that the blood is actually pumped, which is quite a remarkable feat, is the blood's pumped back from your feet
mm.
back up to your heart. Oh, you know, what does that? Well, it's sort of like it's through a rhythmic pumping action of your muscles.
Wow.
And that's why actually some walking
mm-hmm.
is going to be helpful. So it you're not going to make it worse with nitric oxide.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. Are people
and,
mostly...
And in fact, I mean, there is... It's interesting. However, there is a... when I think about it, there's some element of vein circulation in these phosphodiesterase medications that are used for ED. Because the
erectile dysfunction, that
erectile
is,
dysfunction.
Or endothelial
yeah,
dysfunction
so,
is
so
the other.
So actually, nitric oxide is a gate to cause some vasodilation, and primarily because it's the veins of the penis that actually are responsible for an erection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, is there going to be some worsening of varicosities with nitric oxide? Well, apparently not. I mean, otherwise, Viagra would give you varicose veins.
Right. And lots of celery would give you varicose veins.
Right, yeah.
Or, you know
yeah.
green smoothies or something like
yeah.
that.
So, yeah. But interestingly, there is, I know this is a segue, I know, but there's a case recently reported of, you know, there's a lot of generic Viagra out there.
Yeah.
Because Viagra's so darn expensive. I ordered for a patient the other day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things where we, you know, we talk for 40 minutes and then, you know, it's on the way out of the door. He goes, oh, by the way, can you give me some Viagra? You know, that's how it is usually. It's like, the patient's hand is on the door, and he turns around and says, oh, can you give me some Viagra?
Yeah.
Sort of typical male thing. And, you know, I said, fine, yeah, great. You know, how much do you need? And he says, well, 30 will be fine. I don't use it that often, so I prescribed 30.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a notation from the, I got a fax, actually, from the insurance company saying that that would, it's the pharmacy, basically. His insurance doesn't cover it. $1,500. So for
what?
30, yeah.
For 30 pills?
$50 a piece. So the guy called up, he was irate, and I said, okay, you know, we'll figure out another way. And just around that time, Viagra became generic. So we actually were able to order it through a compounding pharmacy, or people can, you know, get it from Canada cheaper. But as a result, it comes in different forms. It's sort of like the pills are like very low strength, but you know, you take 20 milligrams to give you your 520s to give you 100.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's liquids. And with a liquid, it's sort of like the tendency is to say, well, they say, make sure you take this very small amount, you know, just swig it, man. You know, it's like, we're going to have sex. And somebody did that. And they inadvertently swigged a lot of sildenafil, generic sildenafil.
Did they drop? Oof.
Well, what happened was you might expect they might drop, you know,
yeah.
and faint because of blood pressure with all the vasodilation.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, you know, the pills are blue, and there's, it's kind of interesting because you get blue vision.
Blue vision, I've heard of that, yeah.
Well, what happened with this guy is first he got the blue vision, mm-hmm. now he's left with primarily red vision because it blew out his blue...
rods and cones?
Well, the cones. The rods are the black and white.
Okay.
The cones are, so it blew out the capacity of the cones to perceive blue, and he's left with red-tinged vision permanently.
Permanently?
Yeah, it's one of the...
That's frightening.
And there are actually lawsuits against Viagra. Now, the makers of Viagra, Pfizer, I think, they say, hey, not our problem. If you'd taken the pills like
the way we said,
our pills, $50 a pop, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you went and you got the generic. Not our responsibility. So that's being fought in court. You know, you can imagine the lawyer's arguments, you know, like, well, yeah, it's your drug, but
wow.
It's like, you invented the drug. Well, sorry, I'm sorry, that somebody else is making it. No, we're not responsible. So that's how that went.
Fascinating. Okay. Coming back to varicose veins, mostly people are predisposed.
Mm-hmm.
Or would something else, you know, does really standing too much, being on your feet all your life, you know, being a salesperson in retail or a waiter or something like that.
There are risk factors. You know, one is constipation because of the pressure that it puts on the venous plexus.
Mm-hmm.
The other is pregnancy, obviously. After pregnancy, you get it worse.
Yeah.
The other is, you know, female gender.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my father actually had very bad varicose veins. I never inherited them.
Wow.
Fortunately, he actually had he was a little older when he got drafted to the military. He was in his 30s in World War II, and he actually had it may have saved his life. It may be why I'm alive today, because my father's varicose veins. But he had a military, he was in the military, but they did not ship him overseas because he had to have operations. He had vein stripping in his legs, primitive version of vein stripping in the military. And so that, you know, varicose veins saved my life.
Wow.
Or allowed me to come into being.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
All right.
Because he might have, you know, ended up on Juneau Beach or, you know, on Omaha Beach.
Saved him from combat.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Or in, you know, Guadalcanal or something like that.
Fascinating story, Dr. Hoffman. Lewis, thank you for your question.
And that's what we do. We do segues here. We can't help ourselves. Okay, let's pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. And in part two, give us a preview of what we're going to talk about.
Wouldn't it be better for most people to take vitamin D rather than flu shots?
Excellent question.
As we're coming upon the season, right?
It sounds like a slightly rhetorical question,
uh-huh.
but we will address that question when we return in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Alayla Mutin, who's our nutritionist in residence, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.